Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
Okay, subject of the day is the urinary system. And the urinary system does a variety of different things, though the thing we're probably most familiar with is that it filters the blood. It basically filters out metabolic wastes from the liver. It filters out toxins that may have made their way into the blood. And it filters out excess ions. The other thing it does, it certainly excretes water, but a major function of it is to return a majority of the water to the body. In this regulation of water, of excreting water and again returning the majority of it to the body, it regulates blood volume. That's a second thing it does. Basically, if it excretes a lot of water, the blood volume goes down. If it retains a lot of water, the blood volume goes up. So as an artifact of filtering, of water regulation, it is also regulating blood volume. It regulates also the concentration of solutes in the blood. Solutes, ions such as sodium and chlorine and potassium and calcium. And basically, this is also a matter of balancing the water or retaining water or excreting water in the fact that if there's less volume in the blood, these solutes are more concentrated. And if there's more volume in the blood, the solutes are less concentrated. Another thing it does, it regulates the pH of the extracellular fluids, of those fluids that are outside of the cells. Regulates the pH, which is the acid-base balance. And basically, hopefully you remember, but this goes on a scale of 1 to 14 as far as acid or base goes, with 7 being not acidic and not basic, being neutral. And basically, if the pH goes down, 5, 4, 3, something like that, that is getting more acidic. If it goes the other way, 8, 9, 10, it is getting more basic. What acid, what determines the acidity or baseness of these fluids is the hydrogen ions. In other words, more hydrogen ions in the fluid, it's more acidic. Fewer hydrogen ions, it's more basic. And basically, the urinary system secretes hydrogen ions, therefore increasing the acidity of the fluids involved. It also regulates the manufacture of red blood cells. The kidneys produce a hormone called erythropoietin, and erythropoietin stimulates the manufacture of red blood cells. So it's involved in the regulation of red blood cells, in the manufacture of red blood cells. It also regulates the synthesis, the manufacture of vitamin D. And in the respect of regulating the manufacture of vitamin D, vitamin D is involved in the control of blood calcium levels. Therefore, Secondarily, with respect to its regulating vitamin D synthesis, it is also regulating blood calcium levels. Okay, the there's four component parts to the urinary system. There are two kidneys, and one on the right side, one on the left side. And the one on the right is just inferior, just below the liver. And the one on the left is inferior, just below the spleen. From the kidneys, there are two tubes coming out, one from each. They're referred to as ureters, which are going to the urinary bladder. That is the structure that holds that contains the urine, and that's the urinary bladder is located in the pelvic cavity, and from the urinary bladder, urine then passes to the urethra, which is the tube that takes it on out. Now, the structure of the kidneys themselves, these two structures, first of all, this is like coming in from the outside. Actually, even before we get to the kidneys, there is a layer of loose connective tissue that anchors the kidneys to the abdominal wall. And this is referred to as the renal fascia. Again, loose connective tissue connects it to the abdominal wall so they aren't just moving around loosely. Inside that, making our way to the kidney itself, there's a layer of fat. It's called pararenal fat, and it serves as for cushioning, as fats often do. It serves to cushion the kidneys from impact. Then we come to the kidney itself, and it is surrounded by what is called the renal capsule. Capsules frequently surround many structures, and basically it is composed of fibrous connective tissue. Then there's an area in the kidney, kind of kidney-shaped. There's an indentation there. And the indentation is referred to as the hilum. And it's in this area right here in the hilum, in this indentation portion of it, that vessels, arteries and veins go in and go out. And again, nerves go in and go out. There is an open area within the kidneys. Basically, it's an opening, and it also does contain fat and connective tissue, but this opening in there is called the renal sinus, and the sinuses are free. These open areas within organisms are frequently referred to as sinuses. This is the renal sinus. Now, within the kidney itself, there's an outer region of it and an inner region of it. And again, as is frequently called, these things are frequently called, the outer region is called the cortex, and the inner region is referred to as the medulla. Now, there are, within the kidneys, there are structures, cone-shaped structures, these various different cone-shaped structures that are found within the medulla. And these are referred to as renal pyramids. I guess I call them cones. Well, they're sort of shaped also like pyramids, so they're referred to as renal pyramids. And the material which really extends from the cortex, the same material as the cortex, that is in between these renal pyramids that are found throughout the kidneys, This is referred to as the renal columns. So within the kidney itself, you've got the cortex, you've got the medulla inside, and within the medulla, you've got these cones or renal pyramids. And the tissue in between, again, is really an extension of the cortex, but those are called renal columns. Okay, the actual functional unit of the kidneys, again, we've referred to the fact that a major function here is to filter the blood. The major filtration unit structure is called a nephron. And the nephrons are located within the pyramids, those structures I talked about before, the renal pyramids. They also extend into the nephron also extends into the cortex. If we start where blood is going to be entering these structures, these nephrons, we start with what is called the renal corpuscle. And the renal corpuscle, the blood's coming into this area coming into this. And there's two structures in there within the renal corpuscle. There is what is called the Bowman's capsule. So a membrane within the corpuscle itself, a membrane around the inside of that, sort of towards the outside regions of the corpuscle, is a membrane called Bowman's capsule. Bowman's capsule, by the way, is the membrane where filtration is going to occur. This is the screen or the filtration. This is where filtration happens. There's two layers to it. There is a parietal layer, sort of towards the outside, and a visceral layer towards the inside. And again, if this is going to be a membrane of filtration, there has to be some holes in it. There are actually slits, and they are called filtration slits within this membrane. Okay, so Bowman's capsule. Within that, inside, are what is called the glomerulus. And this is a network of capillaries where the blood is going to go through this network of capillaries. And then the pressure of the blood pressure itself is going to force filtration of the blood that is within these capillaries through Bowman's capsule, and then it's going to go on for processing, and we'll talk about that in a minute. If this pressure causes the blood within the capillaries to be forced through this membrane, to be filtered, the first place it's going to go, it goes to an inner cavity, to a cavity within the corpuscle itself, and then goes out to, it's going to go through a tube, and the first place it goes is called the proximal tubule. Proximal, closest. Proximal tubule. As it makes its way into the, and I'm going to talk about what happens here, but the first place it goes after the corpuscle is into the proximal tubule. Then it is going to go down what is referred to as the loop of Henle. It's a loop that goes down and comes back up. So the corpuscle, the proximal tubule, then the loop of Henle, and on the way down, it's called the descending loop of Henle. Descending, makes sense. The other side, as it comes up the other side, that's the ascending loop of Henle. Then it comes to a region, a tubule continuing this tube, called the distal tubule. It's further away. Then this fluid, which is referred to as the filtrate, goes from the distal tubule to collecting tubules, or the collecting duct. And the collecting ducts, or tubules, then go to the renal sinus, where the urine is collected. And from the renal sinus, then it goes down the ureters, one from each kidney, to the urinary bladder, where the urine is stored, until the urge comes along, and then it is the walls of the urinary bladder contract and force the urine out through the urethra. Now I'm going to talk about the actual production of urine. Those were the structures involved. We followed the pathway of it. But now actually, how does urine get produced? First of all, the blood comes in, we're filtering blood. Blood comes in through the renal artery, breaks into arterioles, which make their way to the renal pyramids, which contain the nephrons, the functional unit of filtration, and specifically within the nephron, where it's going to enter is into the renal corpuscle. Now the renal corpuscle has that membrane in there, Bowman's capsule, and within that are the capillaries carrying the blood, which is called the glomerulus. Now through blood pressure, which is called, this is going to be pressure filtration, the pressure being supplied by blood pressure. And it's going to force the liquid, the liquids of the blood through Bowman's capsule, through those slits in Bowman's capsule, and collecting on the outside is what we refer to as the filtrate. And that's what's going to go through and get processed in the nephron itself. The filtrate, by the way, how much blood is filtered, it's quite a bit. It's about 180 liters per day. By the way, of the filtrate, all in all, about 99% of that filtrate is actually going to be returned. The rest of it is going to be excreted. So a very small amount is excreted. The majority of it is returned. Majority of water definitely is returned. The filtrate, by the way, those slits are pretty small, so only certain things can make it through. Large things can't. Large things being blood cells, red and white blood cells, don't get filtered, can't make it through, stay in the blood. And larger proteins can't make it through either, so they will also stay in the blood. So the filtrate contains, what does get pushed out there, where the filtrate does contain water, things like glucose, amino acids, the structural units of a protein, nitrogenous wastes from the liver, such as urea and uric acid. Both of those, by the way, contain nitrogen, and that's why they're referred to as nitrogenous wastes. And nitrogen, these nitrogenous wastes are toxic to the body and do need to be excreted. So again, those can make it through, relatively small molecules. Another one that also contains nitrogen is creatinine, which is a byproduct of the breakdown of protein. And again, for the most part, these functions are occurring in the liver. The manufacture of nitrogenous waste, for the most part, is a function of the liver. Okay, so we've got the filtrate. And the first place it is going to come to, the first part of this tube of the nephron it's going to come to, is called the proximal tubule. Proximal, closer. In the proximal convoluted tubule, sodium is going to be reabsorbed, actively transported back into the blood, into the capillaries that surround the loop of Henle. When sodium is actively transported back out, what follows? Osmosis. What is it that follows? Water. So water, basically water, is being reabsorbed. As a matter of fact, in the filtrate of what went, what was filtered in the renal corpuscle to begin with, about 65 at this point in the proximal tubule, about 65% of the water is going to be reabsorbed through this process. Now we're into the descending loop of Henle. And again here, sodium is going to actively be transported back into the blood. Again, water is going to follow. And again, about of what's left of the filtrate, about 15% of the water is going to be reabsorbed at this point in the descending loop of Henle. There is also the active transport of a few other salts also. As you go down towards the into the medulla, deeper into the medulla, the concentration gradient of the salts outside and the salt and the filtrate inside gets higher. And therefore, the water is getting less and less, but the concentration gradient is getting higher, so it's wringing out more and more water as it goes deeper into the loop of Henle, down the descending tubule. Makes it around up the other side to the ascending loop of Henle. And the ascending loop of Henle actually is impermeable to water. So therefore, water can't be brought back in the ascending loop of Henle. But certain of the other molecules are. Sodium is, again, still actively transported back in. Chloride. Potassium are actively transported back into the blood system. Keep in mind, of the original filtrate, 99% is going to be brought back in. In point of fact, you might say, hey, what's that? Why would you send it all out and then bring it all back? The idea is to get rid of waste products, of toxins, of things that might be damaging to the body. So the best idea, you can't have a system, or it would be very difficult to have a system that knew all these toxic products that might be in the blood and have a system for each one of those. So the idea is send everything out and bring back what you need. Therefore, by the process of elimination, you've gotten rid of everything that might be damaging. Okay, so ascending loop of Henle, sodium, chloride, and potassium brought back in. Brings us to the distal convoluted tubule, of which water is once again reabsorbed. and it is regulated. In the distal convoluted tubule, the reabsorption of water is in a great part by diffusion. For diffusion, you need to have some openings, because if you got a higher concentration inside than you have outside, it has to have an opening to be able to make it through. And those openings are regulated by anti-diuretic hormone. And I'll talk a little more about that later. But this hormone causes the openings, the transport channels for water to become more plentiful, and therefore more water is reabsorbed. If you don't have ADH, if there's a low amount of it, then you have fewer of these channels and less water is reabsorbed. So it regulates, ADH regulates the amount of water that is reabsorbed. Another activity in the distal convoluted tubule is called tubular excretion. This is where molecules from the blood are actually transported into the distal convoluted tubule, not brought back out. This is for excretion. And these are the things that are actively transported from the blood into the filtrate in the distal convoluted tubule are things such as uric acid, creatinine, hydrogen ions, and I talked about the importance of that relative to the balance of blood pH, and ammonia. From there, we make it to the collecting duct. And the collecting duct water is again reabsorbed. Water is a very valuable commodity. We don't like to lose a lot of water, so water is brought back in again. And this is regulated by another hormone called aldosterone. And again, I'll talk more about that later. Aldosterone does act, it causes the active transport of sodium back into the blood, and therefore water follows, like was discussed earlier. All in all, when we're all said and done, the formation of urine rids the body of metabolic waste, urea, uric acid, creatinine, and other things that might be toxic to the body. There's byproducts of bacterial infections and so forth that could be in your blood. And therefore, again, the idea is send it all out, bring back what you need. The excretion of this, I kind of mentioned before, from the collecting tubule, it makes it to the renal pelvis, makes it to the uriner, and through peristaltic contractions, makes its way to the urinary bladder. So you can have transport of urine even if you're standing on your head. And again, when the urge comes along, urethra, urinary bladder, the walls of it contract and force it out the urethra. Now, I mentioned about the regulation of that. I talked about ADH and aldosterone, so I'll talk about that just a little bit more here. ADH, anti-diuretic hormone, is a hormone that is produced by the posterior pituitary. And it's responsive, the production of it is responsive to blood osmolality, how concentrated is the blood. In other words, how thick is it, you might say. It, again, as mentioned before, increases the water permeability in the distal tubule and collecting duct. And again, if you have high levels of ADH, there is more reabsorption of water, which in terms of blood volume decreases the increases blood volume, you bring more water back in, and decreases the output of urine. Aldosterone. is a hormone produced by the adrenal gland, actually specifically in the adrenal cortex. And it increases due to stress-related situations. It's the flight, or it's one of the hormones involved in the flight or fight reaction. Aldosterone also, what it does is increase the, when it's present, increases the active transport of sodium back into the blood. And therefore, again, through osmosis, water follows, and water back into the blood. This also increases blood volume and decreases urinary output. Somewhat the thought of it being related to flight or fight reaction is if you're in a stressful situation and you're preoccupied with what you're going to do, you don't want to think about urinating. So again, it decreases the blood volume. Okay, there's effects of aging. In other words, as one gets older, these things don't work as well as they did when one was younger. True of all systems, unfortunately. But as aging affects the urinary system, as one gets older, there's a gradual decrease in the size of the kidneys themselves. But it's not terrible, because actually you can function properly and maintain the proper homeostatic condition with just one-third of the kidney size or function that that the kidneys have when you are younger. So, not terrible. The amount of blood flowing through the kidneys decreases as one gets older, so there is less filtration. The number of glomeruli, the capillary beds within the bone that contain within the Bowman's capsule, decrease, and their ability to secrete the material through the Bowman's capsule decreases. So there's less filtrate going out, less filtration process altogether. The ability to concentrate the urine declines as it becomes less responsive to ADH, antidiuretic hormone.
Don't know much about history, don't know much biology, don't know much about a science book, don't know much about the French I took, but I do know that I love you, and I know that if you love me,